Welcome to Healing for the Four Folds of Life on TalkZone.com. Here's your host, natural healing practitioner, Terry L. Page.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the very first edition of Healing for the Four Folds of Life. I'm your hostess, Terry Page. I'm a natural healing practitioner here in Lexington, Kentucky. I'm a licensed massage therapist, reflexologist, pressure therapist, intuitive healer, and an herbalist. I'm also a master at the monthly MP Fair put on by Patty Starr here in Lexington. For more info on that, you can go to mpfair.com, or the link can also be found on my website. Now, one of the first questions that I always get when I do my seminars is, what are the four folds of life? What I am referring to are the four bodies. We are not just one body, but four layered together. We are our physical body, but also mental body, emotional body, and a spiritual or energy body. To achieve a true healing, all of these bodies must be addressed. Healing issues, disease, and even injuries all begin in one of our other three bodies before they make themselves known in our physical. Two of the most overlooked are the spirit or energy body and the mental body. So we're going to talk a little bit about those here today. The mental body is usually thought of as your mind, but it is much more than that. It is where you have choice. You mentally choose what happens in your body, whether you are aware of it or not. Every thought we think is programming our bodies. Now think about this for just a minute. How many times a day do we get frustrated with ourselves and think things like, oh, I can't do anything right, or my life sucks? And these are just examples of conscious thoughts that are going through our minds. What about the thoughts that were programmed into us from childhood by people we looked up to, our mentors? All these thoughts are reaffirmed often enough because they become ingrained and become programs that are running our lives and other thoughts as well. So we repeatedly are affirming and creating the same things over and over, unless we take back our power and reprogram our minds to think the way we want with positive, healthy, productive thoughts. Now, another one I always get weird looks on is the spiritual body. People have mixed reactions to this when I talk about it. People tend to think that spiritual body as being connected to their spiritual beliefs or their soul. It is to a degree, but it is also more. When I talk of a spiritual body, I'm referring to your energy body or your ethereal body that innervates all the other bodies and every cell that you have. It is overlooked, yet it is one of the most important places and the first place that you can go to head off illnesses in many, many cases. There are lots of types of energy. People think of ghosts and spirit energy and healing energy and things like this, but what you're not realizing is a lot of this can come off of actual conscious living people. Many times, it's done without even thinking about it. Great times of great emotion can leave an emotional or a energy imprint on a certain area. When you get mad and you start carrying on or hooting and hollering, you can drop balls of energy. When you're mad at somebody else, you can actually throw energy at them. People are usually not aware that they are doing this. There's also people who are energy vampires, where you talk to them and you just feel completely drained or sad or depressed. They're actually taking your energy. There's always some sort of energy play going on when we interact with anything else or any other human. There's numerous things out there that seek to steal or feed on this energy, things you cannot see, even parasites, if you will. I've taken to calling them that because basically that's what they are. They can attach to your life force. What happens if a machine has an energy drain in a certain area? It weakens and malfunctions. Well, so does your body. If our energy gets too low, we will weaken and get sick. I encouraged one woman who had three such parasites on her to get help. She had been going to the hospital because all the blood in her body was disappearing, and the doctors were dumbfounded. They couldn't figure out a single reason why this would happen. Three times she had to go in for transfusions. I met her after this, and she was telling me this, and I started working and clearing her energy body, and I found three balls attached to the outside of her back. We took them off, And later that evening, she emailed me and she says, I cannot tell you how different I feel. She says, you didn't even touch me, but I feel joy again. For the first time in years, I feel joy and I'm happy and I'm getting my energy back. Well, I continued to email and chat with her over the next couple of months. She got all her strength and health back, and she suddenly had a turnaround and no more missing blood. Most of the time, as I said, physical ailments don't begin on the physical level. They originate in one of the other three bodies. That's an example of how they can originate in the ethereal body or the spirit body. But they can condense and grow, and they become solid, and then they'll manifest in our physical body. Every emotion or thought program corresponds to an organ or an area of your body, and in these areas is usually where we'll tend to manifest the ailment of similar vibration. Everything we experience affects us on all four levels to some degree, be it chemical substances or food. They can affect the physical, but they also have an impact on the mental, emotional, and spiritual bodies. What we take in physically can alter our mood or our brain waves, which in turn will have vibrational shifts in the mental and emotional bodies. How do you fix this? Because most people will look at you and wonder what you're talking about if you were to go and say, can you fix my spiritual body or can you look at my emotional body? Unless you go to a fourfold healer that is accustomed to this, or a lot of holistic healers will be able to help you with this. When you repeatedly store the same type of negative emotion or trauma or thoughts in the same places, it creates a stagnation of energy in that area, in which in time it'll cause a weakness. Certain examples of this would be anger is stored in the liver. Gallbladder is resentment. Now, anger stored long enough will become resentment. Resentment stored long enough will become cancer. Emotions, whether you hold them in or are ignoring them, usually hit in the stomach area. That is the emotional center of the body. The pancreas is sweetness of life. We've seen an uprise in our society of diabetes. How many people are working their lives away and never taking a moment to smell the roses, never taking a moment to do anything nice for themselves? They're not getting any sweetness in life. And this is just one area that starts to weaken the pancreas. Spiritual connections and your basic foundations is usually spleen, but for some reason also, if you're desperately angry at somebody and want to hit him, it's always going to hit you in the spleen, and spleen is connected to shoulder. Once I start explaining this, a lot of people will go, oh, okay, now I understand. Now, one thing that I have noticed over the last couple of years of dealing with some of my paranormal groups is all four bodies have an impact on death. The thoughts we repeatedly thought in life generate a vibration in tune with the vibrational level of what we are thinking. If we repeatedly think of loving thoughts, happy thoughts, more often than not, that our mental body will reflect that vibration even after we have died. But where I have found, when I've gone to places like hospitals, is whatever illness and thought patterns and emotions that they had at the time of death, combined with a lot of the drugs that people are getting drugged with at the time of death, it's affecting their ability after the spirit leaves the body to realize that they're dead. The same holds true with our emotion and spiritual bodies. We take all three bodies combined, and it will explain the state of our physical at the time of our death, even to an extent of what we died of. For example, if we spent a large amount of our life focusing on and experiencing hate, resentment, and anger, a lot of people like to hold grudges to the grave, I would not be surprised to find that they had died of liver problems or cancer. If a person had a mental program playing that caused them to resist and hold on to these things and refuse to let these things go, then the cancer might be found also in the bowels. As the bowels tend to represent what we're holding on to or trying to get rid of in our bodies. Urinary tends to show what we're angry about, what we're ticked off about, to put it in a nice way. A thought is energy, when you think about it, it you take energy and you condense energy and it becomes physical. This is how these manifest in our bodies. How do you deal with this? Well, mental body, you have to change the programming. You have to change the belief or the thought pattern that is running in your head. This takes time and patience with yourself. There are several ways that you can do this, and we're going to explore one with our guests after our first break. But you have to identify the thought, then reprogram your thinking the way you want it to be. I recommend using positive affirmations, guided meditations, and a lot of books out there will help you with this. One, for example, is Louise Hay's book, You Can Heal Your Life. It's a good place or tool to begin with. The emotional body, I usually get good results from flower essences when it comes to releasing emotional baggage. They are subtle, gentle, and slow, but can produce some amazing results when used properly. Some of my personal favorites are Australian bush essences, and if I can't get those, I'll use Bach, because they're usually readily available. The spirit, I think, what am I going to do with it? Do I go to get blessed by a priest? Well, that's one way of doing it. But that doesn't heal the individual centers. That will take care of a lot of the religious and spiritual ramifications to an outer level. But on the inner level, you can only heal to your own vibration or your own energy. Therefore, it is usually necessary to seek out a four-level healer such as myself or a holistic healer, Reiki master, something along those lines, that can help you balance it above your own energy. What I like to do is look for someone who can spot and remove ethereal parasites, attachments, energy stealers, and the like. People that do like chakra balances, Reiki healing, spiritual journeys. Choosing someone who can do more than one of these for you at a time and can do it well, it can help immensely in getting you on your way towards health and balance. When we come back, we will be talking to one of these practitioners named Larry Crockett, and he will give you some examples of what we've been talking about. Choosing one that can do more than one is actually a more money-saving way of going about this as well. Most people tend to live in their heads and mental thoughts, and this is usually something it's difficult for people to work with. So this is what we're going to be talking about today, a little bit of information on how to get into your head and start finding out what's in there and reprogramming it. And we'll be talking to him right after our break.
Welcome back to Healing for the Four Folds of Life. Here's Terry Page.
Welcome back, everybody. And for our guest today, I would like to introduce Larry Crockett. Larry is a certified master of Christology, a Usi traditional Reiki master and teacher, and is certified in crystal surgery. Hello, Larry. How are you doing today?
Marvelous. And yourself?
Oh, fantastic. All right, Larry, exactly what is crystal surgery? How does that work?
Well, crystal surgery is a method for working or operating directly on the energy field and the energy body. The energy field, which most people are usually, it's known as the aura, so we call it the energy field. It's a surrounding electromagnetic field. We use the aura and the energy field interchangeably. So, and also the energy body. The energy body is referred, it's like your etheric body. They kind of the same thing. The etheric body and the energy body, we refer to it interchangeably. What the energy body is an exact duplicate of the physical body, but it's an energetic form. So when we do crystal surgery, it's just like prepping for a regular surgery. We prep the energy body, and then if there's certain things that we're guided to do. We have a team of maybe myself and a couple other people, or myself and the guides, because it's the person's guides on the table, my guides, and we work together to help eliminate what needs to be eliminated or put back in, what needs to be put back in.
So you're talking guides, you mean the spirit guides?
Yes.
Okay. What do you do when you do the crystal surgery? Do you actually use crystals?
We place crystals on the body. There are certain crystals mean certain things, and they have a certain type of vibration that's needed for the crystal surgery. Like say if you want to remove some type of negativity that you're holding within your body, you would use like ruby and zoisite. If you want to like cool the body down, energetically, you would use like fluorite or calcite, green fluorite and green calcite. And there's a lot of different things that you could use to, it really depends on the person. Go ahead and give me an example and I'll explain how I would, do that.
Okay, let's say a person comes to you and they're trying to fight cancer holistically. What would you use? Let's say it's lung cancer.
Usually cancer is very difficult thing to deal with. It's the fact that it's more or less the healing aspect would be more or less the mental and emotional state of it, not the physical.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, there's been people that I've known personally that has had cancer, and they would come in and they would have like a crystal surgery done. But each individual is different, so it's not just a one thing cures everybody, and it's not a cure,
right.
Curative thing, because that cures are basically for the physical. The healing aspect of crystal surgery is for emotional and mental, which
okay.
can lead into the physical. But it really depends on the individual state of mind, what they came into the world to do. But we can help them make the transition easier. So,
okay.
We can work on releasing certain things that they're holding within themselves. We can work on releasing or relieving the pressure or the pain and things like that to where,
okay.
You're kind of more subdued a little bit. What I mean by
okay.
that is more comfortable.
With the healing process.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. What kind of things do you usually see? What kind of problems, ailments do you usually see when people come to you for a crystal session?
Well, the people that I usually see that come in for a crystal session are usually, they got some issues. Not too long ago, a person came in and their best friend had died. And you could tell that they were very visibly shaken up about it. And what we came to do, what we did was to help them cope and understand the process and relieve all that tension and guilt and anxiety out of their body so they can function more better in their life.
Yeah, that's like what I was talking about a little bit earlier, how when we get these strong emotions and thought patterns, we tend to store them in certain areas of our body, which can cause a weakness, which leads to illness or disease. So
going with the flow of that is the thing is that we do hold tendency to have energy pockets in our energy field, and the crystal surgery would help release those energy pockets and restore the energy back into the proper flow of the body. So in other words, like say if you had a trauma or something, they're out in your energy field, your aura, there would be a certain pocket. You can usually hear it with sound or the guides will come in and tell you but you can hear it with sound. So you have a couple crystals, you have maybe a singing bowl or a tuning fork or something of that nature. You can strike it and you can go around the body and you can hear the disturbance in their energy field. So what we do when we find a disturbance, we would break it up. We break the energy block up and return the flow back into that particular chakra.
Yeah, because that would then innervate all the other layers of the body, restoring energy so that they can heal from whatever problem mm-hmm. it is that they're having. Okay, that's amazing that you can actually hear the mm-hmm. disturbance in the field. Proof again that it's really there, and then this isn't something that everybody is making up.
No.
When you do a crystal surgery session, about how long does it take for a session?
It can take up to 30 minutes to about an hour and a half. We usually don't want to go no more than an hour and a half because the individual has to assimilate what has transpired. Like I say, you don't want to work on somebody's heart chakra for 2 or 3 hours and then allow them to walk out into the world. And say if you dealt with an issue of, like, say, at 10 years old, the person got their heart broken by a girl or a guy, and you wind up returning that heart back into got rid of the trauma of that dejection or of that other person. You don't want them walking out and all of a sudden they fall in love with the first person they see.
That wouldn't be good, no.
create the same thing over again. Because basically what happened was at the time of the rejection at that point is that they closed their heart off a little bit. And that heart could still be a 10-year-old boy or a 10-year-old girl. So you would want to work gradually on that. You wouldn't want to just do it and say, oh, you're all fixed. Well, that's one of the things. We don't fix anything. It's up to the individual to allow them to move on and progress on their path. And with crystal surgery, we just help remove those blocks, help restore the energy back into the energy field and the energy body, and allow them to progress like they would naturally have done if that had not happened.
Oh, that's fascinating. Okay, so from what you're saying, is am I right to assume that more than one session would usually be good for complex problems like trying to heal wounds of the heart or blockages in this area, say like overcoming a loss of someone?
Yeah,
or an animal even, because I know a lot of us get really attached to our four-legged animals and our four-legged family members.
That's for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
What's normal? What is the normal amount of times that it takes someone? I guess is it more up to the person as to how they want to progress and heal and how they're willing to release? Or
do you
force things out, or do that?
You don't force anything out. The person will say, somebody comes in and says, I have this issue, I was wondering if you could be able to help me with it. So that would be something I would, the person would get down on the table. We would do the prep work, and then we would be guided to do whatever we needed to do. And usually the person on the table gets to relax. They don't really have to think or do anything. They just have to lay there and just relax. When the crystal surgery starts being taken place, you can see the client relaxing on the table. The eyes would flutter. They'll give a and then you know it's working. You know the guides are there. You're doing what you're supposed to do with the crystals and everything. It's a wonderful process. And usually, it's pretty successful. Something has happened when the person gets up. I feel much better. I feel lighter. And that one of the comments is, I feel lighter. And then that something had taken place. They release something. They let go of something. But it's always up to them whether they want to bring that back or not. But at that particular time, it worked. Now, later on, maybe a month later, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, they might run across a different issue, and then they might come back, and then you'd address whatever issue that is going on with that. But say you have another person that comes in and says, fix me. We can't fix anybody.
Right.
I've had a couple people come in and say, oh, my leg hurts, fix me. And, yeah. Well, you know, I can't fix you. Because a lot of times when people do that, they don't want to take responsibility,
right,
for their own life path. So, you know, if they want a session, you know, we can do something to maybe calm them down a little bit, maybe try to give them suggestions or ideas of what to look at. But if you can do, crystal surgery on somebody that says, fix me, but you have, as a practitioner, you have to know that you're not going to be able to fix them.
Right. So it's a partnership, but natural healing is not a free ride. You have to work towards it.
Exactly. Yeah. And, so if they get on the table and I do the crystal surgery according to whatever I'm guided to do, it's up to them. It's whether they want to accept it or not, that's their issue. Usually when they say something like that, my job is basically to help them change their mind to be able to want to take, to participate in their own healing.
Right.
And that way they can actually heal from that because they're interacting with what's going on. But if they're totally shut down and just say, fix me, there's really nothing you can do.
Now, at that point, they're looking for a Band-Aid, and they're not really wanting to fix the problem at its core.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. How is crystal surgery different from what's known as psychic surgery?
Well, I really didn't know what psychic surgery was. I had to look that up and find out. Psychic surgery, from my understanding, is the fact that they use their physical hands to go into the physical body and remove or retrieve physical matter from the physical body. Whereas the crystal surgery, crystal work, is that you work on the energy body and the energy field, and there's no physical.
Okay. All right, well, we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to return and talk some more with Larry about shamanic healer. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
And now, more healing for the four folds of life on TalkZone.com. Here's Terry Page.
Welcome back, everybody. We've been speaking with Larry Crockett, Master of Crystallogy, Shamanic Healer, and Reiki Master. Now we are going to speak with him on shamanic healing. Larry, what exactly does shamanic healing entail?
Well, usually what happens is we usually do like a shamanic journeying circle, where you have a group of people that would come, but it could be individual too. What it entails is that we have the person lie down or sit in a chair, as long as they're in a comfortable position to where they're not worried about their body movements, oh, my back's hurting, or this chair is uncomfortable. So the ideal thing is to make sure they're comfortable and to do a journey. And then what we do with a journey is we journey to the upper world and the lower world. The upper world is usually we have the sensation of going up, and the upper world is most of the time it's our guides are in human form, our angels, our benevolent ascendants and ascended masters, Asian deities and the like. They're usually in human form. The lower world is that we go down, we have the sensation going down, like going into a cave and going downward, or we could be going down into the valley, or walking into a tree, a hollow tree, and have the sensation going down that way. And when going to the lower world, we're basically going to meet our guides, and those guides are usually in animal form. Not all inclusive. You can meet an animal guide in the upper world, and you can meet an angel in the lower world. But usually, 90% of the time, you'll see a animal guide in the lower world and a human form type guide in the upper world. And what we do in the beginning, I start and give the people an intention on what to do. Like, for example, this past weekend we did a journey on going up to the upper world and asking your guide, who is Larry Crockett? And then in the process of doing that, the drum would start going, and I would climb up the mountain or the tree or however I use to go up. And once I get there, I meet my guide, and I pose this question. And the guide will give me information because I'm asking for information on who I am. And it's very interesting because you could get the information through visuals. You can get it through sound. You can get it in many different ways. The thing for you is to make sure that you're aware of what's going on so you can pick this up. It's very helpful because if I want more insight about myself or try to help other people get more insight for them, we would do a journey like that and get information from our guides to come back and write it all down. Sometimes it doesn't make any sense, but if you write it down, I've been a couple times where I've written things down from a journey, and about a week later I ran across and said, that's it. That's what it was. So it can really help with things that are going on in your life. You know, like if you want to let go of things that really don't matter too much, but for some reason or another we have an attachment to, whether I have that updated iPod or something, and, you know, well, darn it, you know, it could help get rid of jealousy. It can help get rid of things that really feed the ego type thing. So in other words, mm-hmm. let go of the attachments and to be more of your authentic self than what we've been told that we should be or how to be.
So, in essence, a journey is very much like a guided meditation.
Very similar.
See your guides and angels and spirit guides.
When the drumming starts, and basically what the drumming does, I like to call it like the drumming kind of bores you to death, so your mind switches on to something else. And by that, it kind of just changes your state of consciousness. But it's not to where your consciousness is out of whack. You're still here in the physical, and you can still hear what's going on around you, but you're kind of like in two different states of consciousness at the same time. And it's not like going to sleep or having a dream, but it's similar if people out that have where they can remember their dreams or their lucid dreams, that it's very similar to that. It's just changing your state of consciousness to access information from your guide. It's almost like tuning in the radio dial. You have one station, one vibration, one state of consciousness, and then when you turn it a little bit, like through the use of a drum or a rattle, you change it and you switch it and you tune into a different vibration or state of consciousness, and then you ask your questions. A lot of times it's like, oh, I'm just making this up. There is no way that I got that. Nah, that's just too simple. But the whole point of doing the journey is the fact that you set your intention on what you're trying to learn. And then when the information comes, a lot of people say, oh, that can't be. That I know that already, but it's being reinforced. Just go with the flow of the story, and you'll be amazed on the information that you get.
Now, I have had the absolute wonderful pleasure of being in the room when Larry conducts one of his shamanic journeys. And once he starts that drum, you can feel it vibrating in every cell of your body. And my mind just goes. And whatever question it is that I'm focusing on, I have never failed to get an answer in one of your journeys. They are quite amazing. What are some questions that are good for people just starting out to pursue? People who really have no clue what they're looking for.
Well, what we do usually when you have someone that has not done a journey before, we usually go, we explain to them how the drum, you know, just the beating of the drum, the four sets of seven beats for them to finish up their conversation. And then there's like 20 seconds of rapid beating on the drum, and that's for them to come back the way they came. If they went up the staircase, they want to come back down the staircase. And then there's four more sets of seven beats, and then they come back into the room, open their eyes, and start writing down the information that they get. And usually on the first journey or first couple of journeys, we usually journey to the upper world just to meet your guide and spend some time with them. You get a name. That's not that important, but some people like names. And in the lower world, we just go down and see if we can meet our animal guide. It's interesting because a lot of times when people go down to the lower world to meet their animal guide, I've had people come back and they have a perception that they have to get to a certain spot. One particular lady came back from a journey and I asked her if she had got an animal guide, and she said no. She said, I was going down the steps. I couldn't get there because of the screeching eagle. And then it's like, well, you know, you just said what you got. It's funny because we have a mindset that there's a certain spot that we have to be in order to receive the information. So it helps develop your awareness that there's other things there that we have to pay attention to.
So sort of watch your expectations when you go into this and just open your mind to be aware of everything that's going on and not just what you're expecting to happen. Is that what you're trying to get to?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, that's basically it. It's because like we have a perception that we have to be somewhere or someplace or expect something when it's happening right in front of us and we're just not paying attention to it. So it's easy to just let your mind go, be free, don't have no attachments or expectations, just allow it to happen.
What would you tell people that say, oh, well, I'm just not good at creative visualizing, I just can't see things in my head? What would your advice to them be to get the most out of the journey?
Well, usually when people say, well, I'm not getting anything or whatever, well, I would encourage them to, how were you feeling during the journey? And they would be talking, and then some people would get, well, I was feeling really agitated, or I was really feeling like it was a really fast paced, or they would start describing something that they were feeling. So listen, pay attention to what you're feeling. You know, it doesn't always have to be visual. It could be that you know, my imagination kicked in, or the storyline's us, and then I stopped it. Well, you just continue with the storyline. Maybe the information's rolling in through sound or a story. It could be a feeling. It could be, you know, use all your senses, because, you know, it might be that you went down and something didn't smell right or didn't feel right. Usually a lot of people are feelers than visual. So if they felt something, that would be a great indication that you got something out of it. It's a story.
Okay, so don't get hung up if you can't visually see something in your head. There's a lot of other ways that you can receive your information.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, Larry, how did you get into shamanic journey? How did you become a shaman healer, shamanic healer?
It really started when my dad had cancer many years ago. I was interested in crystals and so forth and so on. And then here in Chernville, they had a holistic health expo. So I decided to go to this holistic health expo, and I was a little nervous. I went, but there was this one lady that was doing crystal healing, crystal surgery. And I go, oh, that's interesting. So I figure I'd go in. I know this, we're talking about shamanic healing, but this is how I got started. So I signed up on the email after the class. Thought, oh, that's pretty cool. So I went to the crystal surge, the crystal circle. That was cool. But they, while being there, they said, well, next week we have shamanic journeying. And I thought, ooh, that sounds interesting. I figured I'll give it a shot. So I signed up, and then the week went by. And I'm standing in my living room. It's 30 minutes to go, and I had 30 minutes to get there. And I'm like, should I go or should I stay? Should I go or should I stay? I could hear my mom in the background saying, no, that's the devil stuff. And I said, nah, oh, what the hell. If I make fun of myself, I can always run out. But, you know, oh, they'll never see me again. But what was interesting, when I got there, I had did the first journey, was to journey up to the upper world and meet your master teacher, your angel, your whatever. Mine happened to be my master teacher. And during the first journey, I said, you know, okay, I'm climbing the mountain, I'm climbing the tree, you know, what else can I do to get there? And all of a sudden, when I let go, it just clicked, and I was over on some clouds. And then I could see my master teacher kind of float out towards me. And just said hello, and the callback for the drum happened. I said, no! And it was like, oh, I just got here, and it's time to go back. So I went ahead and followed the instructions, came back. And so the second journey was to go up to meet your guide and have them take you to meet a benevolent ancestor. So as soon as he started doing the drum, I was instantly right there, right back where I had left off, and I'm like, yes, thank goodness. And so I told my guide, I said, the journey for this is to meet you, tell you that for you to take me to meet a benevolent ancestor. And this, she took me back to Stonehenge, and there was festivities going on and the partying and everything. And I got to meet a druid priest. And the priest took me into his house and was explaining a lot of details and stuff. It was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Why his house was up a little higher and so forth and so on. And after he got all done, and I had the little tour of the house, we came out, sat down, had some beer, grog, whatever you want to call it. And then he turned to me and said, no, about your two boys. And he started telling me and talking to me and giving me advice on how my kids are and what would work and what wouldn't to get them motivated and so forth and so on. And at that moment, the feeling of unconditional love that I felt, you can't surpass anything in this world. It was unbelievable. And if someone came to me to this day and asked me what was my best moment in my life, I would have to say that moment. And that's one of the reasons why on my cars I have Stonehenge on there. And the reason why I continue to do this is because I would like to be able to share this or try to get people to experience this, because it's, you can't tell people about an experience. They have to experience it.
Exactly.
Once they experience,
experience it for themselves. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to accept callers if anyone would like to call in and ask questions for either myself or for Larry. So we'll be back in just a moment.
Let's return to Terry Page for more healing for the four folds of life on TalkZone.com.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. We've been speaking with Larry Crockett, Master of Christology, Shamanic Healer, and Reiki Master and Teacher. Right now, we are opening phone lines to see if anyone would have any questions for Larry or myself. The number you can call in on is 888-GO-FOR-IT or 888-463-6748. So, Larry, that sounds like a very powerful introduction into shamanic healing for you.
Yes, it was. Yep, and I continued to go, and I went and started doing some training for about 3.5 years to 4 years, and it's led and progressed into many other things. There's the like soul retrieval. I learned how to do that, and that was a very interesting experience also. But
so for you, shamanic journey was the opening doorway for everything.
Yes.
That is very, very powerful. So you can, you never know what you're going to encounter when you do a journey.
Nope, you never know. This past weekend, we facilitated a journey outside. We had about, I'd say about 15 people. And we give the intention. And it's, I know this is going to sound kind of weird, but we had a couple people crying, and I really know when I see people crying, I know that there's been some type of breakthrough because they've let go of something and they're releasing the energy that they've been holding within themselves. And then the healing starts right after that. And it's amazing, because it's kind of really joyous. I don't know how else to say. As they say, an unconditional, love brings you to a state of tears. So, I mean, it's just a wonderful feeling, a wonderful sight to see someone letting go and start their healing process.
That is very, very powerful. When you actually realize that, you helped to facilitate their healing process, it there's no better feeling in the world. What are some of your favorite journeys? Can you share any of them with us? I mean, maybe not so grand as when you first, your first one, but on a typical journey, what do you encounter?
On a journey, sometimes I've had where there's only been a couple words that have come through, or maybe a picture, and that's it. And it's usually on the behalf of somebody else. That's the reason why we do the journeys, is because someone has a request. And as being the healer, you would go up and do the journey, or go down to the lower world and do the journey to retrieve information from the guides to bring back to give to the person that you're doing the journey for. And sometimes it could only be one word. And you just give them that word, and you can just see, oh, my gosh. You know, and it means the world to them, but to you, it makes absolutely no sense. You know, like peanut butter and Rocky Road ice cream. And you say, well, I don't know why I got that, but this is the message. And they say, oh, my gosh, my grandpa had, you know, he loved that, and blah, blah, blah. And then they start going, and then it triggers something within them brings it up to the surface for them to deal with what they had stuffed down or whatever they had done with it. So it's amazing. One word could be a trigger, and it means nothing to me, but it means the world to the client.
That's amazing when that happens. Now, when you as a healer are conducting the journey, I know people are concerned with, well, if I do this, am I going to be exposed or vulnerable to negative energies or spirits or things like that? What do you do in preparation to protect against all that during a journey?
Well, the whole point is that we're doing the journey to receive information from our guides, our angels, and so forth. So I don't put no energy or intention into bringing that up.
Okay.
But in the case of someone says, well, I didn't, blah, blah, well, you're always in control, because that's the reason why with the shamanic journey and with the drumming or the rattling is that you've got a foot in both worlds at the same time. So in other words, when you know that it's something and you don't like it, it's your choice to stop and just end the journey, period. Or change your reference, say you're not welcome here and go somewhere else, you know, go up to your angel or ask for your angel to come in or whatever. But it's the intention of the journey. And the intentions of the journeys never include something that's negative.
Okay, so people don't really need to worry about that. They're in a safe environment to explore their connections to the higher realm, so to speak, and to their guides and angels.
Well, there is something, because since you brought this up, this popped in my head. My wife, whenever I told her, you know, we need to go journey through the lower world and meet your animal guide in whatever the intention is, for her upbringing, she cannot go to the lower world because she associates the lower world with something else. I don't know how she associates it, but you can always go up to the upper world, get your guide, and or have the animal guides meet you in the upper world. And if there's something, you know, like her, she can't go to the lower world because she has an attachment to what that means. Some people say when we say lower world, they think underworld. And it depends on what their definition of what it is.
Okay, so it depends on basically what their mindset is for the different terminology.
Exactly.
Okay, but when you're talking lower world, it's just a term for where you find the animal spirits, not necessarily an underworld or anything like that.
Exactly. It's just because we don't have a certain terminology we have to differentiate what's lower, what's the world of the animals and what's the world of the angels. And there's also a middle world and so forth and so on, but we're not going to get into that today.
Yeah. Well, we're about out of time. We have been speaking with Larry Crockett, Master of Christology, Shamanic Healer, Reiki Master and Teacher. You can visit his website, healerdragon.com, or look for us both at the monthly Mystical Paranormal Fair hosted by Patty Starr in Lexington, Kentucky. And that website is mpfair.com. Larry, it's been a pleasure, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
You too.